This is a tape of a series sponsored by the Kentucky Folklore Foundation. We're in the home of Mr. and Mrs. Jones, Ms. Emma and Jesse Jones. Ms. Emma is the granddaughter of Dr. John Clark. Mr. Jones knows also some information about Dr. Clark and also knew of Dr. Clark. Mm-hmm. And he was also a coal miner, and we're going to talk to him a bit about his experiences in the mines and in the camp towns, although he didn't live in the camps. He lived out in this area, but worked in the camps many years. And we're going to talk about that, and we'll also talk to Miss Emma about her grandfather. So Emma, did you grow up in here, this area, all your life?
Ever since I was 9 years old.
And do you remember your granddaddy?
Yes, I do.
What years when you began to remember him?
Well, from the time I was about 5 years old on, I can remember it. Back in them days, I did. He had a medicine chair, and he had his office in his own house. And he's taking this medicine, and he had all kept up, and our kids was not allowed in his office. So we knew that, and we would watch him go in, and he was fixing his medicine and working in there, but we wasn't allowed in it. Mm-hmm. But we could see him fixing his medicine, dosing his medicine, fixing it out. And he had all kinds of herbs. He had a garden. And the garden below his house were nothing but herbs that he planted. So it smelled so good, the flowers and bloom, the fall year. We'd get there and he'd tell us to not go over in the garden. And then we never did get in that garden. He had garden garlic, and he had horseradish, and he had another kind of weed that we thought was real pretty flowers, but we didn't bother his flowers anyway because it was his medicine. And I don't know, just all kinds of names he gave that. He'd get this and dose it out. And through the winter season, he gathered it in and dried it and had it hanging up and upstairs. So on the stem, and he knowed every chemical. He had it wrote down on what it was. That stick that he had it drying on.
Miss Jesse, could you describe the place where he lived? You took me up there. This kind of describe it for us.
Yeah. You mean how it might look at that time being?
Yes, sir. Right.
At that time being, there was a big fine fruit orchard there. I recollect, he had in there, and a very nice looking place. When I first, but I just trying to remember about how old I'd have been when I was passing through there and I seen him. But anyway, I must have been about 8 or 10 years old, something out of the way. And I'd see the old pass there, and see the old man sitting in the porch, and that's about as much as I can recollect him, in his last go around there.
And you purchased some of this property, didn't you?
Yeah.
Of his property.
Yeah.
And you were down. You cleaned up a place around there. There's some things you found that were interesting.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. You were telling me.
Well, I found a old loom where the old lady made her cloth on, and them old ox shoes. I found them all over the place around there. And they had a big chimney built in there out of sandstone to the house. And I'd talked a lot with Mitchell, her uncle there, And he couldn't tell me. No way he could tell me when anything like that had ever been built in there, And when I was talking with him, he was around 75, 80. And his younger days, I don't recollect how old he'd have been when his dad come in there and located on that property. But anyway, yeah, this old time house and big chimney, you know, fireplace and everything built in there, and he couldn't tell me. I tried to get information of him if he could give me any ideas how far back that had been, you know, since they'd located in there, and he couldn't tell me. They just found it there like that, you know, and they'd been about, I know two old settlers lived there years and years before that.
So there wasn't a nail in the house hardly.
I doubt being a nail in there, doubt it by. You might have somehow found one of them old time. They made them, you know, an old big four square piece of metal of a nail of a thing. Now, I believe I have recollect seeing something like that somewhere in it. But outside of that, there wasn't any of these here newer maker nails in it that I know of.
And they had the boards were cut the old way?
Yeah, it had been Mitchell's. I'd talk with him, you know, and he'd tell me about how that had been manufactured out. He said they stood the logs on their ends some way, called a whip saw, you know, and they'd get up on some kind of a scaffold and start to top that log and saw down. And the joist and everything and all the framing that was in that house had been sawed like that. And you could tell it'd been cut different than any piece of wood, you know, you'd ever recollect seen. And the finest timber that could have been grilled. I wasn't took pretty for the house, you know.
I know, it's a sad thing it burned.
Yeah.
I wondered, you know, as much time as he spent apparently, especially in his younger days, doctoring around, helping people around the community, how he was able to operate a big farm. Did your father and mother, they must have had to work mighty hard around the house.
I'd say her mother really did. And kids, you know. I'd say they really did, because he spent most of his time out, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they kept the home place going, did all the work. And
they grew the rye and the wheat, had their cattle and sheep, and all kind of stuff like that. I've heard my mama say they'd give them many a time to feed their sheep and take care of the sheep and then run around the cliffs and go to take care of them. And it'd be snow and ice. And they'd bring them in, we'd take something, wrap them up, take care of them till they could pull them through, till the bad spell were over.
And she made her own clothes, didn't Lindsay Woolsey, out of the flax?
They were wool. Blankets, stuff like that, and their coats. I heard Mom say she'd wore a coat that was made of wool.
They even made their shoes. Old man told me, you know, about he'd crack out and leaving out off the farm up here and going down this little river here down to what they call Rittner. And he'd start out with a pair of them shoes on, you know. It'd been made, homemade out of them hides they'd tanned. And he'd get down here and get in the river, maybe get them wet, and he'd have to pull them off and pack them back home. They'd just stretch out all over the place, you know, when they get wet. Yeah, I heard him tell about that. Oh, he's innocent. Lord, that old man could sit and tell you something. Old man Mitchell could.
Yeah. Well, Miss Emma's told us about her grandfather's garden where he raised herbs, and could you tell us about how you figure I know you talked with his brother, her brother.
Yeah.
How they went out in the woods and what they got out there. Could you tell us a bit about what he probably got for medicine?
Yeah, I forgot a lot of different names even already, but he dig what they call button snake roots, you know. Lady slipper. Bush sarsaparilla. We'd make a round and go plumb down over on the big river, you know, and we'd get out on them high cliffs. He'd dig what they call a button snake root and maybe get Dawn down a little footer, you know, dig lady slipper and wind up plumb down on the river and get that bush sarsaparilla. And on the way back, you know, we're coming back through them big north mountains to dig bone set, get that bone set. Goldenrod and golden seal, he called it, you know. All different stuff. We'd get, make a habit like that, you know, getting out, me and him make around nearly every fall down a little later this, you know, gathering us in a big bunch of that stuff.
Slippery elm when he gets slippery elm?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you can get into it, the slippery elm trees, you know.
Uh-huh. You just get the bark off the bark, stuff inside.
Yeah.
Inside. Yeah. It's real good medicine. It's a healing medicine. And we have used it right on. I yet use it.
You know, there was some of his herbs, let's see. There was a lot of his herbs still growing around there, you know, when we moved in there.
Yeah. The horseradish. And like
horseradish and
old people had that back then. And the horseradish.
A lot of different stuff that he'd left there still growing there. Garlic, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It was a lot of that still growing.
How long did y'all live there in the old home place?
I'll tell you, we must have lived there about
14 years or longer. Been longer than that one if we lived around here at this other place, 16 years. About 14 years around there.
Well, I guess we lived in an old home house about 14 years, didn't we? And then moved out of it and got it destroyed, you know.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, I wouldn't take nothing for it.
Wonder how, you know, between you, how he used to, how he would go from place to place and how long he'd stay in that type of thing. Have you ever heard anybody talk about?
Yeah, I've heard him talk. He'd go stay 2 or 3 weeks, you know, maybe till they got well. Yeah.
Well, he'd stay till
if
they got
come up again a case of.
He got all hopes up that he knew they were going to make it before he leave.
Yeah, if they struck with something like a fever or something there, you know, he'd just go and stay till they come out of it.
What'd he do, take his herbs and roots in the...
And make more. While he was there, he would steep them and fix them and take doses along with him. If he had to come back home, he'd come back home and get more medicine and go back.
And in that day and time, I'd say if the people, whoever it was doctoring, if they was able to pay him in a few chickens or whatnot, you know, or a piece of bacon they had it hung up or something. Why, that was, you know, they wasn't any money much them days. And I'd say that was about the way he collected big, a lot of his gold, you know, people that could help him.
He rode horseback all the time. Yeah. Always keep some horse to ride all the way, you know. Crosses the rivers. When it was up, he'd go on a boat, maybe then get across the river. And some of the boys were going to take his horse back, and then they'd meet him back there a certain day to help pick him back up. And they'd bring him back. And they'd walk miles then. Didn't pay attention to walking 4 or 5 miles.
Suppose he got way out in the country somewhere and couldn't get back home, what would he do? Would people put him up sometime?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Now he'd always managed to get back, you know, they'd always have him back. Yeah. See, he'd made it back to the, back home, main home. There was a lady that, she ain't been dead very long, but you know, she was a whirly. And they lived in another holler way over across called Connecting to Jones Holler. And this was called Clark Holler. And she were going into this, over to this place, and she got mobbed up. And she got her, they thought they had her plumb out, and she just passed out and go behind a log and was laying, and they found her and brought her to him, and he sat by her and doctored the baby till they got over it and pulled out of it. Every bit of her sickness.
Yeah, that old lady started over there, they said it must have been in, you know, down in the
in
later
fall.
In the fall of the year. She'd supposed to been going over there to cut and dry fruit
dry
that
fruit.
Day, apples, you know. And come up missing some way or another. She never did get there, and she didn't return back home. And when they got a little had her a while uneasy about her, you know, and started looking for her, well, she must have had a dog with her.
A dog, yeah.
The dog come back to the house, so they took the dog back, and the dog pointed to where this old man had her hid behind the big log. And it rucked leaves, you know, and covered her up. Her and her little daughter, he knocked it in the head too, you know, and had it hid there.
But they both
alive. They said, you know, the flies had them covered up and everything that time, you know, later in the day.
Found them that night, real late. It was done early in the morning, late that I found them. And he doctored with much hope and change, didn't think they would come out of it, but he could tell she was yet her pulse beating. But he just kept on with hopes she would get over it. With it.
And while we was talking about doctors, that old man, John Hill, what little bit I knowed about him. I had an uncle that got out in the woods and shot himself. Shot himself in the arm, but down, you know, just above his wrist for the
That lower. Was after my grandpa
yeah.
was dead.
Yeah. Added at her grandpa got disabled doing things. And that there load of shot it took him in the arm there, you know, and maybe just about near shot his arm off up, you know, so far. And they went and got the old man John Hill, and he took his arm off. Up just to blow his elbow a little. He's trying to save his elbow, you know. And that didn't work, and they had to go back and get him, and he come back and took it off up above his elbow. And I recollect all of that. Now, that happened right here at home, you see. It wasn't about no hospital. And my mother, I recollect my mother, it was my mother's sister's husband, you know.
Her brother-in-law.
Yeah, it got shot that way, and I recollect the place today as plain as daylight back over here on the hill. You know, we went there that day, they were going to be there to take the old man's arm off. They made us kids get off out in a little open place in the yard, you know, and play out there all day while this old man, John Hill, was taking his arm off. Now, he'd go places and do stuff like that, so it wasn't about no such thing as hospital. Anyways, nigh, you know. And my dad, he was working and digging a basement up there. Somehow or another, down and under a low floor, you know, and he got a big chunk of dirt undermined and it broke loose on him unexpected. Caught his shovel some way or another as he was making a lick and threw him in a twist and jerked his kidneys loose. Well, after that, just shortly after me and her there was married, been close 50. Then this little, it close 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And some of the kids coming running in told me where I lived or where, you know, Dad is just about gone. Well, that really, you know, just worried me to death. I struck out and run over as quick as I could, and I went in, and he was just cooking, you know, just roasting out. I commenced wanting to know what doctor he'd do the change. I was wanting to get his feelings tonight as on what doctor he does a change. He said, don't go get none tall for me. He said, I'm going to have to pass on. I said, don't feel that way, Dad. I said, long as his life is a chance, I said, you tell me who you'd have confidence in and I'll try to get him here. Well, he said, if he was going to get anybody at all, he said, he does a change for old man John Hill as anybody, you know. Well, I struck out and had out down across that river, jumped in the river and went across, waded the river and went on over. And I got over while the old man, I had a hard vehicle to haul him back as far as I could get him, you know, and then walk him on in. And he got there and down and examined him right close and gave him a good treatment of some sort, you know, and he told me, he said, you watch him now. He said his kidneys, one of them, jerked plumb loose, just floating around, and the other one's partly loose. He said, you watch him now and see if he don't pass a lot of blood from him. Everything happened that old man told me, and you know my dad come right out of it, got stout and done lots of work out of that. And he had no way of x-raying that man that I know of, but just sitting there and examining him.
It's amazing.
He knowed more, that man actually didn't, but he knowed, you couldn't have wanted to made an x-ray, cause he told me, you see, signs to watch. Mm-hmm. Everything proved.
That's amazing to me, these men, they didn't have much formal education, but they watched and they observed, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, my grandpa,
Well, now you think about that man, of course that man.
In the moonlight school. You heard of that?
Yes.
And that's where he got his schooling.
Is that wrong?
In the moonlight school, in the sand. They would have that light, moonlight, teach it. I wonder about that a lot. How? Another poor way for school to what we are living to today. He sure did. He got his, he could tell, you know, on medicine and how to, he got to get right pretty good. And then he could tell, you know, and a lot of things that way, he got pretty good on writing it. He had books and he read them. He got old time books, you know, song books, doctor books and that. And he knew them. He'd take that and go out and he'd get something he'd compare with it. And he studied them by the firelight every night, his old doctor books.
He sure took that moonlight education a long way, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah, boy. Yeah. Well, you just think about a man going to a place and operating like that.
That's true.
Taking a man's arm off twice. Of course, you know he had medicine probably just powerful enough to numb him. He would have had to have it. And this and that and t'other, but now he down and done the job, you see. That man never was to know for the doctor.
And as far as I've been able to determine, Dr. John Hill didn't have much education either. I believe he had a college degree.
Yeah.
But he never had any medical training. But he, from everybody's said, he's a good doctor.
Oh, he was. He was real good.
He must have had a lot of confidence, and people had confidence in him.
Yeah.
That was why it take him.
He could just start, he could just down about examine anyone and tell them right off what was the matter, you know. That beat anything.
Somebody was telling me there came, one man was really sick, and he came in and he just sat there for hours just looking at it. Just
exercising
before he made the decision.
Yeah. Well, I recollect them getting him for me back then, you know, you had to be in awful bad shape, somebody did, before they'd even budge far enough to get a doctor like that. But I do recollect them getting him for me one time when I had what they call a malaria fever. And of course they thought they were just going about lose me, you know, out of this small body can, you know, recollect it. But buddy, he pulled me right out of it. Yeah.
You mentioned that people didn't go for the doctor unless it was really bad. Did the people in the homes, they knew a little bit about roots?
Well, they sure did. They were always someone intelligent enough, you know. If one didn't know what he really ought to, well, that old guy, maybe another know the right smart little.
Well, in this community area here, when I grew up and come over in here, we'd go about all of them. We'd visit them, everyone, you know, all night. When I'm from just a little place. Well, they'd sit and talk about what would help one another and what kind of herbs they drunk and even to have in the tea. And now we never see it on the tables, but back then, my aunt, uncles and all of our people ran. And then we did that. My mom did that a lot. They'd have one night, we'd have a sassafras tea drink. The next night, we'd have spicewood tea, and then they have dried mountain tea, I know Mama getting it out of bags that was dry and just putting this on dry and cook and it, you know, boiling, steaming. And we'd have that sweetened with cane sorghum. And we drank that way, our teas. And we drank that for table use a lot of times. We have that drinking.
Yeah, what little bit of experience I'd ever had on old man Doc Powell was talking about back there at Pine Knot. I recollect very well and good. I must have been 8 or 10 years old, you know. And my mother took what they call a nervous breakdown. She was in a bed fast for about 12 months. And my dad, he just worked and spent, and I mean just about had him broke up, you know, trying to bring her out of that. And he went to that old man, Doc Powell, and he told him what to get. Some kind of herbs. He must went to the woods and went to digging them herbs and boiling up for her, and she come out of it. Got right out of the bed and come out of it.
Well, did families go out and get that to get those herbs and roots and put them in the house and keep them in the
dry?
How'd they do that though?
Well, they get so much of it, and if it was moist, they'd take it and hang it up and dry it out and powder have it, and would dry it in the far heat at night, and on papers and things till they got it, till they knew it wasn't mildew or something. And then they'd bag it up, to the way that they would fix it to his work, you know, the medicine. Because all the seasons, why, at certain times is when they could gather this stuff. And they had to get enough in to do them through to the next season. And they knew they had to get ginseng. I remember my grandpa having ginseng in his office at all time, and he had a little mill that he grinded on. He grinded up in little pieces, little, it was fine. And he used that with the yellow root. He had a yellow root, and he'd grind that, he'd grind it up. And he put that just so much ounces on the knife, and ounced it out. We called it, he did it that time, being on a knife blade and used quinine. That was something I ain't seen for years. It was a little bottle, small bottle, and he'd buy that somewhere. He would find that and get that quinine to go with his medicine and use that in his herbs. And they would make up medicine use, and they kept that medicine away till they knowed it would keep. He had to put enough of moonshine.
Alcohol
in it.
To get it to keep, you know. Yeah. They kept that.
It stored in the alcohol,
yeah.
Mix it with it.
Yeah.
So it would stay.
Yeah.
And they set that back in big jugs.
Yeah, you take an old man like that, you could have went about his home, you'd found a big jug sitting somewhere, you know.
Well, he always gave
best
people
of stuff, you know,
fixtures,
good
yeah.
Alcohol.
Yeah, it was real good.
Good corn whiskey.
Yeah,
good corn.
Made out of corn.
Uh-huh. Didn't make it cheap, made it good.
Yeah, they made it good. I recollect my daddy cooking it. And he took a spell one time, got in hard luck, you know, and he got in with some of his brothers. And they get back in them jungles and cook it, you know. I'd hide back in the woods and watch for them.
That's right.
But they cook what they call straight corn, buddy. I mean,
it was good stuff. They made their mess and was kept it.
Well, it was a good thing that somebody made it, because it wouldn't have had for the medicine, would it?
No.
Good stuff, and who could afford to buy that bonded stuff?
Oh,
no, you see, they about had to have that little bit of that to keep their medicine through warm weather, you see. Now, back in that day and time, see, there wasn't no electric, there wasn't no juice, wasn't no dove in these jungles.
They couldn't freeze it, and they didn't have
the way. Cause the only way they'd have keeping their milk and butter would be a good cold spring, you see. And you can get back in, like we was talking, back in these jungles, you know, in these old saddle places. And if you'll get a look, and you'll find you a good cold spring. Because they tried to get near that, you see. Keep her milk and butter.
Saddle.
Yeah.
Now, this is very interesting. I'm going to turn the tape over. It's coming to the end. Miss Jessie, we all know that there was this unfortunate incident in Dr. Clark's life. How old was he when he killed that man? Those men. You know how old he was? Yeah.
He was a bit up in his, around his 40.
He'd been older than that, wasn't he?
No, it was just around his 40s when that happened. Because my mother was just only 12 years old.
Is that right?
What have you heard the way things happened, what happened about the thing?
Well, they'd always just been playing with him, you know, just kind of used him for a play feller, you know. People live further way back in the jungles, had maybe come across these jungles, you know, to get through pathways of going over to the Stearns Railroad Works back in there, you know. And they just learned to hoop and holler and maybe crawl in close around and climb trees, you know, and holler and prank with him. And they just kind of using him for a play feller, you know. And I hear the feller today, the feller told me that he come by, you know, with a big load of hay on his wagon. He'd been all the way over to on the Stearns Road and got a big load of hay on his wagon. And when they got in, kind of in here and on that mountain up there, some of them come there hollering, taking off. And when they got about even with that old man's house, they was lucky to get on out of the way at that time, because he'd fired on them a few times with that big gun, and that fella told me it hadn't been for that load of hay all saved them. But they kept playing with him like that, you know, and thinking it wasn't no harm in him. He wound up killing one of them.
They were there on his property, on his barn. Then he was tried, and he went to the penitentiary. Some, how many years did he have?
Just had to stay. At that time, it was 9 months. He put 9 months up. But he went on his term of the boy, keep the boy from going. He stood in the boy's shoes.
They accused the boy of being in on it too, you know, but the boy might have hoped due to shooting.
He didn't want to be, he was a fella, I guess the boy was in on it. He didn't want no one picking on him.
I always heard he killed that fella, and then when this other one started to running off, well, the boy shot him in the back. But they said the old man went to war. He was laying, you know, and asking if he knows where his mother, if his mother knows where he's at. And he said, yeah, Mom knows I'm over here. He said, well, all good then. But some of them said, he told him, said, well, if I knowed your mother didn't know where you was at, I'd finish you up and take you out there and put you in that big cave.
Those were rough days, I'll tell you.
But people just have so much. Mm-hmm. If people was at search today, people would know to leave them alone. Mm-hmm. There wouldn't be so much going on. Mm-hmm.
Now, I was just sitting here in the porch there talking to that boy of mine today. I can recollect a time when something like that search happened in the country. You know, people didn't start hollering for the law. Mm-hmm. They just went looking for him themselves. Mm-hmm. My dad got one of his close friends killed back over there in Wayne County. And while he took his gun and hunted, I don't know if the days and days he hunted that fella.
Yeah, you have to place things in perspective. It's a different day we live in now than then.
Yeah.
Very different.
Yeah.
Now, you most of your recollections of your granddaddy was after this unfortunate thing had happened, wasn't it?
Yes.
Now, did he continue to work with his herbs and roots, and even at times, Doc?
And he worked with herbs and roots, and he'd sit on camp with us kids and talk to us and tell us, you know, what we should do, and how we should obey and mind and, you know, and growing through life and take schooling and be careful. He was so proud of them days of being good schooling. You know, he thought it was real good to have the teachers. And to have your books and spelling books and things, you know, to go on through school with. And he would tell us to study and put our heads to and to some purpose to make something, for it couldn't be taken away from us. And he was awfully good fella about sitting around. He was always feeding something wanted us to eat. He had always had melons and marshmallows and fruits of stuff, and there was plenty growed at them days back then, you know. All the rest of the children around grow a lot of stuff and bring back into them around. And he'd always have plenty when we always come about him back then, until we moved over here. Well, he'd always, you know, sit around on a big bench in the porch and peel apples for us. And I remember peeling good Miller apples for me to eat lots of times. And he would just, you know, he would talk about things, and he wanted us to be careful about how we eat. He didn't want us to eat too much sweetener, too much sugar, stuff like that.
Way ahead of himself for a time, wasn't
he? Yeah.
They're just finding that out now.
Yeah.
That's right. He said it would ruin our teeth. And lots of things of sweetening. Now, he believed in this old time, making our sorghum, eating that. But he didn't think we ought to eat sugar. But you know, a lot of kids are going sugar on their tomatoes or sugar on something. He believed you ought to eat salt. And he was awfully good when we was around, always talking. And well, at times he was talking, you know. He was a talking all the time around summers. He was the talkiest old man I ever was with. That's why I don't remember him so much, because he'd talk to us much about anything. And he was a happy person. And he went on after, just before he, about 3 or 4 years before he died, well, they were a school building around there, and he got there around their church. They had a school and a church, and he went to church. He went around their church a lot, and he joined that church and were baptized.
He was.
Yeah.
I was wondering if he's a member of church.
He belonged to a Baptist church.
That was late on.
Yeah.
He baptized late in life, rather late in life.
Yeah.
About 45, so. That's interesting. I was wondering about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, did he, after this, he was legally, probably the license was taken away from everything. He wasn't supposed to practice medicine, but did he at times with people that he knew and trusted, did he go ahead and he practice?
Yeah, it would go about him at any time they called or come after me. There would always someone come and ask for something. He always treated them out and gave them their medicine. Or he'd go see them just bad enough, he'd go check with them. And he was with the family, his family, some of the family, you know. They always went back on him to treat him, doctor him, their sickness.
And he lived quite a while, didn't he, after that?
Yeah, he lived quite a while after that.
See, when did he die?
Died after 1970.
I believe it was 1927.
That's right.
Yeah, 1927.
That's right.
Well, see, you can figure I was born in 1914, you see. You can tell about how old I was, you see. I didn't live, you see, down in around him here in no place. And the only time I recollect seeing him just pass through, you see. I'd pass through him, you know, I recollect different times to see the old man sitting on the porch. I recollect very well how he looked, you know. I can recollect that much about him. It's about all, you know, that I could recollect.
My brother, I had some half brothers, and they were grown up, you know, and they would just enjoy coming and staying all night with him to get to hear him talk to them. And they enjoyed him so much. He just, you know, they just seemed as real back close to him as he was to me, because he didn't make any difference in his kids. Not to my half brothers and sisters.
Now let's go to y'all's experience at the mines, and I know that Mr. Jackson was a miner for a number of years. I got saw you folk. That's a good picture on back there, isn't it? Good of your granddaddy too. I'd like to get that someday if I ever get my video fixed. When did you go into the mines?
I believe about 37.
Y'all were married then, weren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now why did y'all not choose to live in the mine camp? What mine did you work in?
I started in what they call the mine 17.
17.
Mine 17. Mine 17. But see, they want the numbers, a lot of them in, you know.
The Stearns boat.
Yeah.
Stearns boat.
Yeah, Stearns had mine all up and down them big haulers, and they want the numbers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I started in what they call mine 17 at old St. Mihail, they call it. I was up above Paint Cliff, up Rock Creek there. Well, the reason I choose to not being in the camp, I was raised, see, back in the jungles on a little old farm of a place, and I couldn't get over. I'd been teached hard on trying to, done had a more experiences on trying to grow gardens and stuff, and most of our young people does these days, you know. And I couldn't get that out of me. I wanted to be out where I could grow me a little garden and stuff, you know. So I bought me a little place, about 7 acres of ground. I stayed there 6 years then, and they worked that mines out. Now when it worked out, I had to move, of course, to another mines for work, but by that time I'd got ahead a little, you know, enough to come over in here and bought all this tract of land that this old man doctor used to own. They hit a chain of hands there. See, he divided that whole country up. They must have been a couple of thousand acres of it all together at the start, you know, or just that whole country up through there. Went plumb across that main ridge. But he divided that up with his kids, you know. Supposed to give each kid 25 acres or something, other, you know. And invited the whole country up with them. But they come out of his baby one, the family he'd married into, he traded his place off. And by that time, they'd added maybe another share or two in with it, you see. And when I come in there, I bought all they had.
You were doing pretty well in the mines, were you?
Yeah.
Making pretty good money.
Yeah.
Working hard, I imagine.
Yeah. And during that war, World War II there, I doubled back and worked two shifts a minute time before I'd go to town. I'd go down, come out of mine, you know, and go down and get me a bite to eat at the store. Fool around and catch a man trip and go back in. Put up two shifts before I'd come back to the house. And I worked on there. And
it was 10 hours then, or it was just 8 hours now.
Yeah, 10 hour shifts.
20 hours.
Yeah, I'd put up 20 hours before I'd ever return home to sleep a little, you know. And I'd lay down, sleep 2-3 hours, maybe go right back. And I'd put in 6-7 shifts that way through the week, you see. And I recollect coming up a time out there. They run on Sunday. They run the mines on Sunday for about 3 different Sundays, straight through. Said, you know, that they tried to help gain the war. See, they was getting a lot of help from that. We was passing signing every Red Cross paper to come true, and you name it, you know, just everything.
War bonds.
They scheduled the mines to run there 3 straight Sundays. And you can imagine what I went through with. We'd done already, see, going on there and been married a while. We had a young one too, you see.
and three kids.
And I got by without having to go to the Army. I got deferred because, you know, by staying right on that job, you see. And I recollect superintendent, he'd come around, maybe he'd get a hold of a draggy fella once in a while, you know, and maybe try to lay off a day or something or other. And he'd get out and threaten him, you know, I'll have you ported in to, if you don't get out here.
So you were really in the war, but you were in the mine.
We was actually in the war, and hey, you're putting up, you know, it was pitiful at the money I gave them, but, yeah. And this extra shift, you see, on Sunday, was every bit donated to Red Cross and this and that and that.
Is that?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
I guess y'all did buy some bonds too, though, didn't you? And then later you cash them in.
Yeah, we bought some bonds long during that time, and then later cashed them in.
But that's something new to me. I didn't know that you actually worked for the Red Cross at times.
Oh, Lord mercy, yeah,
that was
pitiful at the money we gave them, you know. We wouldn't turn them down on nothing. That's
new to me.
Yeah.
Another thing
that when I started there in that mine, this experience on how it was operated a little bit, you know. See, we went in there and drilled and shot it on a solid and got it. They wasn't even no machinery, nothing but just an old, we had her just an old crank drill. Mm-hmm. We even drilled with, you see. Yeah. They wasn't.
Dynamo.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then by World War II, didn't have much machinery then, did you?
No, huh? No. No, we didn't have scarcely much. I think they might have had one, might have got a hold of one or two old, what they call drag type bottom machines, was pulled on with a chain, you know. But when we'd get into pillar work or anything, we'd never see one of them. They wouldn't ever bring it around.
Just had your pick.
Yeah.
And shovel it in the
car. Yeah.
What, did you have mule pull cars out, or did you have a truck?
Well, by the time I started there, they just pulled the mules out. There was the old big mule entries and everything, you know. They just pulled them out and pulled them back down, trade them off. They had big barn full of them mules.
I'm interested in this thing where when somebody get hurt or somebody gets sick, how the miners would kind of get the money together. What'd y'all call it? How'd you do that to help somebody if they got in trouble? It's health wise.
You mean about financing?
Yes.
The doctor business?
Right.
Well, they had we kept a good, the company at that day and time packed a good insurance.
Uh-huh.
Yes, yeah, they sure did.
It was, exactly.
Yeah. See, they packed the Blue Cross and Blue Shield, and we had a pretty good insurance. You go to the hospital and just lay down, you know. Stay ever how long, and you know, and I recollect getting mashed up once. Got a big rock on me. Mm-hmm. Well, you can see a little sign of it.
Still left there.
Yeah. Yeah, I got mashed up once.
Well.
And see, the day that I went in there, at that time being, the only way you could get in the mines at all was to go in with someone who's already in there, you see, and had the experience. They wouldn't hire a man if there wasn't someone to take him in with. See, that was a law. Kind of law they had then. So I slipped down there at old mine 17, and my wife, she had about three brothers already working there. I slipped down there and see the superintendent, you know. Why, he said, I'd hire you. I need to hire some. He said, I'd hire you, but he said, you ain't got no one. There's no one here you can go in with, is it? I said, yeah. I said, my wife's got three brothers working here. Oh, well, he said. So he gave me okay to go to the doctor and be examined. And before I got away from there, though, to get to go to the doctor to even be examined, here to come out with a man on a car, you know, and all It broke all pieces. Superintendent looked right over at me. He said, "You reckon you can stand this and Everly work here?" I said, "I'm needing to work. I believe I can." I run on through with it, you know. And the idea was that was a law on getting in, but you once got in, why, well, you know, the program is done. I recollect first day I went in with her brother. Worked with him at one day. The place tried to fall in all day where we was at, you know. Superintendent sat around there and watched it for us all day for us to try to work a little. Well, I went back the next day and he pulled us out of that place and sent me over with one of my cousins and another old man. I worked there a day or two with them, and from that then he sent me back down on a run by myself, wee mile back on a big entry by myself. You see, this idea getting on, Father.
Well, now they had, in addition to the insurance, they had company doctors, did they?
Oh, yeah. They had a company doctor at every camp, but they sure did. They had, Lord, I can recollect a day and time there when they had five or six company doctors. Yeah.
Now that the company doctor, he'd be responsible for all the men working, yeah. Even those that weren't in the camp, you could get medical care.
Yeah. If you weren't even in the camp, yeah, same thing, you know. As long as you were working, you had the same benefits, you see. Yeah, same protection. Yeah. I recollect one time getting my toe mashed, you know. I got it mashed pretty bad, and I never did even pull it in to the superintendent in the mine. I did, you know, I was just a nervy type feller. I'd suffer to the last for it, give up a day's work, see. And I didn't figure it'd be, you know, amount to that much. And I went on back to the house with my toe mashed all pieces. I believe went back maybe and worked one day on it. I wouldn't tell the superintendent what was wrong. But Lord, he'd got that old mining poison engine on, and it set up the awfulest thing you ever seen. I struck out and went up to the doctor. Got treated for it.
You remember which doctor that was?
Simpson. Old man Doc Simpson there at Co-op. Yeah, he was our doctor there, and even the midwife doctor, you know.
He was?
Yeah, poor feller. I recollect going there to try to get him, you know. I see the first kid we had is born, was born before I went in the mine, didn't
he? Yeah. He came to our house.
Yeah. And I went in there to try to get 35. That old man, you know, to go to my house when the first kid was born. And I don't know, he is a kind of a peculiar type feller. He didn't know me from nobody. He kind of turned me down. He wouldn't go. He wouldn't go to the house. So I just went back down and took up the railroad and went on up what they call Old Philadelphia, you know. And there was an old man, Doc Floyd, there at that little town, mining town. Asked him, would he go? Yeah, oh yeah. And I got him to my house then.
And that was with your first baby?
Yeah, the first baby.
And you weren't working in the mines then?
No, not when the first baby
was born.
They
were good, Dad.
Yes. I got him right off Stearns Road, you see, and me not even in poor darn nowhere. Yeah. But Simpson, he's getting old, already kind of agey by that time a little bit, and he's kind of childish and funny if he didn't know you. If he ever learned to know you, he'd do anything. And on after I see then, shortly I moved in on this little place out there, and along come another kid, you know. I won't find God Simpson. There's no much problem. And when he got inside of my little place there that I owned, I had it covered up with garden and all kinds of vegetables, you know. Had a patch of pumpkins planted in there. Lord, there was just a lane. You could have walked all over that patch on them big pumpkins, and he was a pumpkin lover. He got his eyes on them, and when he got ready to leave, I went out, you know, and pulled him big old pumpkin and gave him. And you know, as long as that old man lived, I hauled him back pumpkins. He had the mines all set down there and everything disappeared. The old man lived on there a pretty good while, and he got located out there next to Whitley. A little place called Dixie, I believe, back this side of Whitley, right in our swag there, you know, at that time being, it went by the name of Dixie or something.
Barthel's where he lived till he died. His girl hit.
But he still doctored after he went on out there, you see. And I could go out there to him, go in there, get medicine any time I wanted. Yeah, long as I recollect on after I moved over here, you see, a long time, I'd go back there and get medicine off me. I recollect getting something bad wrong with a big old hog I had around there once, you know, looked like he was going to die with her, you know, and I walked in out there at old man Simpson. I told him, I said, Mr. Simpson, I'd like to get a little bunch of strongest penicillin pills you got. Well, he said, what do you want with her? I said, I hate to tell you. I said, I hate to tell you, but I've got a big old hog that's going to die if I don't find something. And I'll have to tell you, I reckon. Well, he sat down and told me three or four different things. If that be wrong with that hog, that penicillin would work on, you know. And he gave me a bunch of them, and I come on back and went to pouring them down that hog, and he come right out of it.
Do you remember Dr. Meese?
Yeah.
He worked in one of mines, didn't he?
Yeah.
Then later on, I think he had a private practice over here with
him. Yeah, where
I've been over to his office with Dr. Meese.
Yeah. Lord, yeah. We had one on and on. One of something got wrong with one of her babies. Took a diarrhea and the fluid all left it, you know, in bad shape. And I recollect having it in Somerset Hospital and run it up there and kept it about 6-7 days. And they maybe hope it, but they liked a long way, seemed like curing it, you know. And I come back and went out there to old Doc Meese. And I went in there drilling to go all the way back to Somerset and get the medicine that I'd supposed to have, you know. I took my bottles and went back in out there at old Doc Meese. There at Whitley. Well, he told me, he said, now, I can't tell you that I'm giving you the same medicine. They weren't allowed to, I guess, you know. But he said, I think I know what I'm doing. And he went in and got two or three different kinds of medicine. I know he got as much as two different kinds and mixed it up in a bottle and shook it up and hit it direct the same looking stuff that I'd been going to, you know, got at Somerset Clinic. It worked just perfect. The old man, he knowed what he was doing, but he couldn't tell me, you know, if he was giving her medicine.
What now? Going back to the mines there, did they take a certain amount out of your paycheck or for the medical care?
Yeah.
What they started and how they got how much they took?
Well, I don't know at that day and time wasn't much, maybe $1, $2, $3.
It wasn't $3 every time on the statements. You got a statement and show them that's just good, you know, on each statement.
Mm-hmm.
Some months a little higher, some months a little lower. So they didn't go exactly.
And that gave you the insurance and the doctor?
Yeah.
And did they have any hospital or anything?
No, they didn't have no hospital. You had to get out of yon, you know, to another, into Somerset or Oneida. But they did have some good doctors that day and time. They had some good.
And you know something that I really wonder about, how did they, and I don't know whether y'all would be able to tell me, it's a pity they're dead and we don't know, but how did they relate to all these folk type doctors and midwives You know, did they ever cross paths like all the midwives? So certainly some of the people must have preferred to go ahead and have the children with midwives. Did they say that was fine? Or how did they work with those people?
You mean as far as the company and the doctor's source? I mean their lineup of business?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to say is, did they accept the old ways?
Yeah.
The old ways?
Yeah.
You mean?
Yeah.
That's when they'd hear about them.
Yeah.
You know, minors having a kid, and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, no, that didn't interfere. They just said, that's okay if they got by good.
Yeah. So yeah, see, it didn't cost you anything extra for a laboring case.
No.
Didn't cost you anything extra.
One kid's all I ever had in the hospital. All of my rest of them was born at home. Out of 14, 16 kids. And our 14 babies.
That's
and
wonderful.
It was all born at home.
Let me turn this.
Up people's choice, you know, about who they got, their chance, you know.
And so you don't think that the company doctors would have stood in the way of somebody using a
No, they didn't that day and time.
I mean, the company doctors wouldn't have stood in the way if they wanted to use a country doctor or if they wanted to use a midwife.
No.
No,
you never heard of nothing like that them days. No. We got stuff going on these days beyond, you know. I mean, it's plumb out of it.
It's just amazing to me whatever happened to all the midwives.
Well, one that I know that she'd live in today, that she did do all the work. She didn't with the Dr. Simpson.
She stayed with Doc Simpson all the time. Done it, this, you know, still beyond. As the old man Doc Simpson wasn't able, you know, to get out and even go. There's Lena Stevens that quit.
Oh. I know. Get the record of having
her. I've interviewed her.
Yeah.
You may have a record on her.
She's a great, person.
She is great.
Yeah.
I went there and just stayed.
Well, now she's still delivering.
Yeah, she doctored under him all the time.
She were his nurse for years. Doc Simpson's nurse for years.
Yeah.
Lena was.
Yeah, she sure was.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because she was a traditional midwife.
Yes.
She's had no training other than her experience.
She was experienced, and she was his nurse for years. And she first came as doctor in the midwife line. She put in some training. She got her schooling and training, and she came over this part. And she married. She had five kids, so she got to talking to this doctor and went in with him, and he just took her in, you know, and she had some books and some schooling, and she took some schooling. Like they get now up here at Somerset Vocation School. She took a vocation, we call vocation school at them days, and she went into them school in Virginia and got her diploma to be a doctor, a midwife. And then she went in under him, and she's been a midwife for many years now. I just don't have a year.
She says she's been practicing over 40 years.
Yes.
I guess she has, yeah.
Yes, I guess so.
Yeah.
I know I've been with her a lot. Been in her home a lot. And when she's having, you know, just the more cases coming in, and I'd think that the woman could handle them.
Yeah, we was talking about them company doctors. It doesn't make no difference if you never worked at that over at that company. You go in there and they treat you the same. Yeah, they sure would. They treat you the same as if you were working. Cause I know people. Even I know one person even got snake bitten run in there. The old man Simpson, our cool off, you know. They'd do anything in the world they could, you know.
Especially if it's an emergency like that. They knew that it was no other place for people.
Yeah.
How'd they get around, those company doctors? Did they ride a horse, walk, or?
Well, they rid a horse. They'd even ride a horse. When I went and got the first baby we had born there, old man Floyd, he rid a haul, a mule all the way from up there at Fidel to back down here to Junction.
I called him.
I got there at Junction, you see, and they had phones, you know, all up and down the road. I got there, Adder Simpson kindly turned me down. He claimed he couldn't, wasn't able to make it to my house, you see. And I went down there and called Floyd. Floyd said, I got any way of getting down there, I'd be right there. Well, I said, why, what about me bringing a good mule up there? Would you ride that? Yes, sir. You bring me a mule and I'll get right there. Now, that was the way that one.
Well, now, how is it that you had all these midwives? Mm-hmm. And I might be wrong, but it seemed like in the 20s, even as late as the 20s and maybe in the 30s, you had a lot of midwives in around about here and there.
Yeah.
What I wonder is, why did they all just disappear? It's that little old Lena down there.
I'll tell you the... They've died out, a lot of them, and I don't know.
Why didn't they train others?
Well, that's it, and I'll tell you, I don't know. The laws and everything maybe gets funny, and maybe something come along that they can't bear with some way, you know. Now, there was an old man right over here in this next holler over there, an old man by the name of Joe Roberts was a midwife. Why, he'd get out and go at all times in the night. Well, my dad was.
He was?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You know, that's something that's new to me. I didn't know that men were ever midwives. I don't know.
Yeah.
Why.
Well, my dad's wanting born babies all over this entire country.
Oh, Lord, I've been all around here through the drive. I've had many and many cases come up just me by myself with to work it out. I did. I've worked out many cases.
You have?
I seen it was to do, I knowed it was to do, and I keep them in faith,
mm-hmm.
good and along.
Emma, you said that you, at times, that you've delivered babies in the nurse.
Mm-hmm. I always had the enjoyment of naming them after I was with them. I'd give them all the name of the babies. Yeah.
And you've helped Lena sometimes? Or?
Yes, I've been with her at her home. I tried to help her. She showed me a lot of things that, you know, I kept in my head. Sure.
Now, Lena, when she was younger, I guess she went around to the homes too, didn't
yes,
she?
Yes, she did. Yes, she went.
She just got where she could.
Yeah. And she had her whole feet.
I'd say she did.
Her.
And if a kid had to, if it come up a case like that and the woman had to be taken care of, lived a long ways away, you know, you could just take the woman down and set her down and go on and off to your work about your business. I took her there and you must stay there a month now.
I have stayed with her.
Is that right?
Yeah, see, I'd be down there in the mines working, you know, and I'd be on easy, leave her way back over here. I'll just pick her up or take her out there.
Yeah, I would call it in this community right here, this house. But the one of my sister-in-law, the one over there, the baby was barred. I know there's going to have to set because it's too many miles to hit the night to get any about midnight to there. I had to go into it. Well, she always showed me how she did a lot. And, I took care of her, and then there was the other lady that lived around the school building. Was a log house there. I found she wanted me to come. I went. I said, "Ain't there nobody here in this country around here that could help us?" I said, "No." I said, "Hey, we just can't find the mid doctor nowhere." Said, "He's not in this part now." And I said, "Well, that's gonna be a poor church." I said, "We can get by, maybe, but." I said, "Can your mother-in-law help you?" No, said she's too nervous. I said, "There ain't no time to be nervous. Do something." And so she got along just fine. Had a big girl. I named that girl. She was Joanne Coffey. Oh. I've always known her name, Joanne.
You got the name, huh?
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Now that it's a, and you say your father was mid practice too.
Yeah, he
practiced. When was that? How far was that back?
Back in the 30s and on up there. Plumb on up in the 40s, I guess.
Yeah. Well, what was his name?
Rich Jones.
You remember any other the old midwives and some men that were?
Yeah, old man Joe Roberts. Yeah, lived back
Joe,
over here
I
in the. I've
been with him a lot. I've been with Joe many of his occasions. He'd always come through the heart. Come on, Em, let's go. He called me Em. So I'd always go with you. A lot of times.
Well, you've had a lot of good experience.
Yeah.
Old. Be with him.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
You know, a real interesting thing I observe, you know, doctors talk about delivering babies. Lena talks about waiting on.
Yeah.
That's something about those words that, like, I deliver this, but could you comment on that? I'm kind of a word person, but there is something when you say that there's a difference there.
Well, you've got to have patience. They have to have patience. They've got to put trust and let them know. And they can't just depend on a doctor for all. They got to look at theirself, to help theirself, you know, in that case. Because if they give up and just think it's all left in the hands of a doctor, I think they're getting in an awful bad shape. They've got to look after themselves, you know, for the expected and knowing they were going to make it through and help do what they are told to do. Mind and take the heed of what they're supposed to do when if they are in labor. Watch your time, the pains. When you get to time them down to every minute, every 5 minutes, on down to 2 minutes, whenever. When it gets that way, you've got to get on high. They've got to go to watching. If it won't last long, the battle won't last long.
Well, like he's talking about the words there, though, it does sound funny, the meanings of the word, on deliver and waiting on them.
And I guess it does take, and I guess that's one reason doctors, they've gotten so busy that they don't have time to come out to the house and wait around.
No. No.
Nowadays, no doctors hardly ever come to no one's house anymore.
They all have to go to the
hospital.
You
couldn't get one hardly at all. I'm telling you right, you couldn't get one.
No, not nowadays. And they have to start off from the time they get, well, say 6 weeks.
See, this day and time, a doctor won't, or these real doctors won't wait on a woman at all hardly without they start right at the beginning, you see, and check them all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that's kind of good in a way.
Yeah.
They do need prenatal care, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's something that is an improvement. They do need to look and to see if there's going to be complications.
Yeah, there ain't nothing wrong about that.
No, it ain't. But I know what you mean, though.
Yeah.
That can be very expensive.
Yeah.
And some people can't afford it.
Yeah.
It's what's needed. Everybody ought to have that. But some people can't afford it.
They would be shaped to go.
And some people probably don't unaware that it's necessary either.
Yeah, but it'd been back in that day and time, they may, you know, probably plenty of them wouldn't have, but.
Yeah, probably now there's more. Yeah. More.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting thing, it seems to me. What do you think about what was the value of the doctors actually coming to the home? As opposed to going to you having to take many miles off to the hospital.
Maybe the price.
Well, I know the price is a lot of difference, but the quality of care.
Oh, I'd say you're plumb off when you have to take them plumb away, and it used to be you could get them to your home. Yeah, you're plumb away from it. Take back there when that old man take all of his herbs and go and sit down right there and stay, you see. There was something about that, you know, that done them people about as much good as the herbs did.
the cure part.
Yeah, the cure, you see, and the love and care that they had for one another.
If you would come in and showed you they loved you and have to take care of you, you'd put more confidence in. And if you ain't got no confidence in a doctor, you better not go to him. You've got to have your confidence. If I didn't have confidence in the doctor, I wouldn't go to him. I'd quit then.
How do you think most people feel when they go to a doctor, one of these big, big old hospitals? I mean, are they afraid?
Yeah, they probably would be, but most time when the way it happens with people, you know, through these jhanas, if they have to go, they're in a pretty bad shape. I mean, it's just you wouldn't be. Wouldn't be all that bad afraid, I'd say, because you'd be in bad enough shape, you'd be needing help so bad, you see.
Well, I just know how when I see people having come to Lexington Hospital, it looks like to me they don't know where they are. They're afraid because it's so big.
Yeah.
And where to go. I can't believe that's good for anybody's health.
No.
But I see what you mean. They don't go until it's such bad shape that
a lot of them, the fear is done, you know, wore out. I mean, yeah. With a lot of them, of course, like you say, a lot of them go in there just for checkups or this and that and t'other. I'd say the fear on them might be about as much damage as the good they're going to get. You know, on a lot of goals like that, if there ain't all that much wrong with anybody, see. If you was broke up or crippled up or something, you know, serious, why, you wouldn't, you know.
It's more your ailment or what's bothering you than anything else. If you tell the doctor knows what they're doctoring for. You know what they're doctoring for, it's okay. They're having spearmint on you, why, that makes a bad thing. No. You know, it makes it bad for you, it makes it bad for the doctor. He can't understand what he's doctoring for.
Well, we're actually living in a day and time, though, now. You go out here to these doctors just offhanded, if you ain't been there very much. First thing they want to know what's the matter with you. If you can't tell them something's the matter with you, they don't know where to start at. And a lot of people get confused in that, you know. They think, well, if they're going to have to know much of the doctor, ain't much use. But now they ain't got time to check you out trying to hunt for what's wrong anymore, you know. You're going to have to tell them something when you go in there.
Face the new this day and time to what used to be. People
they ain't got that kind of time, fool. They're
not strong. Bodies and younger people is not as strong as they used to be.
Can they endure the pain people used to?
They can endure the pain like people used to.
No, I'd say they're not comparing strong like a lot of them old people.
I know mothers like today. So many of them say, how could you do this and how did you do that? I can't. They'll say, I can't. You know, they ain't built it up to say they can do nothing because they think they're too weak. They really not got no hopes of being that material in their body to do like that we grew up in years back. I don't think I've got a kid to be. Well, it'll be like it went through the rest as I have. I hope they don't know.
That's true. I just wonder, the thing that shocked me the other day in the paper, I don't know whether y'all saw that, it was in the Somerset paper. This child that died because the man couldn't get. Did y'all see that?
baby was done thin. Hmm? No, we didn't see it.
Well, this guy was out of work. He didn't have his.
Seemed me like I heard someone talking about that, seeing that in a paper a little bit.
It was just a couple, 3-4 days ago. I was in Somerset at the time. Guy lost a job and didn't have. His wife got pregnant, and then they're pretty old. She was pretty old, but she got pregnant, unfortunately, as it turned out. He didn't have any money much except, well, his unemployment, and that wasn't too much. And he had, they didn't blame anybody, but they went to the hospital there in Somerset, and they got afraid about it because didn't think they were going to be able to pay for it. And he was trying to work out something, and they didn't seem to cooperate. They said, that's just bad luck, you know, you either get the money or you get a Medicare card or something. So they decided, well, they go over to this Hyden, this home nursing home thing, and maybe that'd be the best place. Then he got an ear infection or something, spent what little bit they did have. They didn't have much money. By the time the baby started to come, it was overdue to start with. They took away 60 miles over to this hospital in Leicester County, and didn't have a $10 to the name at that point. They got over there, and they found out the baby wasn't going to be able to be born naturally, and they had to send them all the way to Lexington. And by the time they got the baby was dead. And you know, that worries me. How many people we gonna have like that?
We'll have a year of life.
Oh, it's looking bad.
And there's not many people like you around to help them.
No, huh? It's looking.
It is. I study about that a lot myself.
They're just getting plumb away from what they are there. It looks like need to be trying to practice more on these herb business and so on.
Well, we live.
Now, people used to live and live to be pretty old. A lot of them lived, a good long life about it. Someone say they're trying to get the life, apparently letting back on people, but I don't. I'm afraid they ain't going to do nothing much of that. But now back there, you know, them people live to be old back in them jungles. They watched after one another and doctored with herbs. And
the care they watched after one another was a lot.
That was more even than the herbs and the roots.
Yes.
Well, that stuff was all put here for the benefit of people, you know. And this day and time, they hit the what little gathered up and sold and took in and compound into stuff like that, manufactured and sent right back to these drug stores and dished out around. And you don't
get. We're losing a lot of our herbs as a dying in the woods and not coming back out. We're losing a lot of our tea stuff that's not qualified out. I don't know what's killed it out or what's happened to it, but it's not growing. I can go now and fields around, look around for the old time tea stuff like my grandfather had, and I can't find it.
It's hard to find some of it. It sure is.
That's what's a mystery to me.
You take what they call a dog fennel, pennerel.
And the dog fennel that we used to call dog fennel.
It's hard to find.
And you can't find that anymore.
I don't know, but one farm in this entire country has got a little dog fennel on it right now. And that's
and
way back up on the head of this little river. I found a farm up there back last summer. It actually had some still sticking on it.
Yeah.
And pennerel, it's about gone because you don't.
And it just be everywhere.
The catnip. Yeah. You know the catnip that used to grow around these old farms back in here. And nowadays it ain't any around them old home places. I can't find any. And then I can go to the woods and find the wall ink, they call it. I know it. And then there's another little vine that I can get and buy and make teas for baby teas. And it's good. And they call it hive tea. When a kid lays and just wants to sleep when they're real little, you know, and they just waller out. You can give them that to a tea and fix it there for him, and he'll stop all that. It will cause them to sleep sound. It's a help to the system. Rest of them. Yeah, and nowadays, they don't doctor little kids enough for them to They're too ambitious. They're all of them wanting to move and go, but they don't rest like they used to. They don't sleep like they used to sleep.
Hitchcock, not changing the subject, but Hit would actually scare anyone to death seeing one of nursing its mother anymore, wouldn't it?
Well, that's health.
Now, well, that would be something to scare people.
If you're in good health,
that's right. And you know, another thing that when I was taught when interviewing Alina, that came up, and that was something I figured was true, because I talked to my wife about it, but I never thought of it. When the woman nurses the child, too, that way she's not as apt to get pregnant as soon either. It's sort of a natural birth control.
Yeah,
as long as she's nursing that child.
That's natural.
That's a natural nature.
That's nature natural, you see.
And see, when we got away from it, though, then you start having children so often that it's bad on the woman.
Yeah, then I always have nursed till I was about a year old, you see, close to a year old before they start to wean from the breast.
And even, I think, in the olden days, they even went longer than that.
They get around them old people.
Let them nurse long and not.
Hide them around and let them nurse till they'd be up running around, you know.
We all raised on breast. I raised all my kids were raised on breast until I got too sick and then took this kid like this rifle trouble. And I had to put up my four leastons on bylaws. But just them two up here, the boy, he was raised on breast. That other girl was raised on breast, but this baby one wasn't. She was always bad, put her on bottle head. Then I got a baby boy, he was on bottle. The oldest one that way. I took the measles, and they were going, and I thought I'd had them when I was little. It was the mumps, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And
mumps,
I got them when one of my kids was 9 months old. And I'll tell you, they were so bad, I couldn't eat them. And he took them because I said he won't take them, him a nursing. Well, he got to him a nurse, I couldn't lay nurse. And he did take them. He'd had them. He had them. The mumps, it was going. And nowadays, with that, of course, we didn't do it then, but there were herbs that you got for them and they tied it, poultices and stuff around your neck for that. That was a lot of help to it. I'm a sweater. Yeah, they have to have all their shots before you start them in Head Start. Before you start in school, they have to have it. They've got to gather and get all them shots and get be prepared for these little things at school just coming. Like they have typhoid, and then they have to take the shots, for whooping cough and stuff like that. And measles shots, things. That they say that keeps it down now to get them under a better control.
Yeah, that's one good thing that's come out of out of the nodding mouth.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was something that the old folk docs couldn't deal with, could they?
No,
those measles were a bad thing.
And that typhoid was so bad.
Yeah.
Until they could improve the sanitation.
Yeah.
That's a great thing that modern medicine has done, and sanitation work.
Yeah.
But all that has to keep going. If they're spending less on that, it could get just as bad, couldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Water get bad?
Yeah, it could build up, nowadays, where a lot of things. Because it's much more.
Yeah, bad. I'd say if it wasn't watched at, it'd get, come right back. By keeping treated for it and watch, you don't hear so much of that.
But there was some real bad areas, I understand, in this area, the typhoid fever.
Typhoid fever went bad. It used to raid high.
Yeah.
It was bad.
I know there's a community up there in Somerset, there around around when Pulaski County, Antioch community, they used to say they used to rage through there.
Yeah.
Because the water, the van never did, the water didn't run off, it just started stagnating.
Yeah.
They got that fixed now, they don't have a trailer.
But they didn't have it until people covered their springs over. The fall and the dew.
I'd say though, water getting low and bad and this and that. And
water got low and we had droughts and things and causes a lot.
Gets germs like that in it.
That's good. Thing has to go a little while before it gets to the tape. When y'all recollect as far back as you can in the birthing of a baby, would the neighbors come in and help in addition to the midwife? Would other women come and maybe even sometime the husbands would not talk on the porch or something?
Yeah, I'd say that.
They would bring food, cook up something good. They thought it would be helpful, like a killed chicken, dumplings, making, coming, grilling, things like that. Bring in, come in, stay with them. Maybe spend the day, see the baby, do a washing, scrub the floors, help clean up, change beds. Yeah, that was a lot of help. I can remember my mom going and leaving, and she'd be gone all day, maybe over to see some of the neighbors and have the be a newborn baby come back and tell us. Well, I was over there helping them today, so we got along good. You know, just say, well, we got along and enjoyed the day, passed it nice. They was all together and having a good time and enjoy us, and you know, and they'd go and help one another in the sickness.
I recollect an old midwife in back in my young days, you know, when my family being born up when I come out of. And there's an old lady by the name of Aunt Ann Burks, and she had a daughter, still a homegrown woman, you know. She'd bring her along with her, and maybe they'd stay 2-3 days or a week.
I think she later became a midwife too, didn't she, Burke?
Yeah, probably did, yes.
I wish some of those women were living so I could talk with them.
Yeah.
But at least we got Lena.
Yeah, we got Lena.
And we got you too.
She was nice. I've always thought a whole lot about her at being, you know, so good. Lena was a wonderful person to help the people. Well, she did help the poor. You know, she didn't choose. A lot of people would choose and say, well, that's a rich guy coming in, so and so, it'll help them.
Yeah, I recollect when one of
them. And then say, well, that's a poor person coming out. We won't help them. We'll just kind of talk in a way to get a shed of them. But she did not choose like that. She just took them all in as they come. She just done one as good a deed as she would the other.
Yeah, I recollect when one of my brothers was born, old Aunt Ann Burks come, you know, and brought her daughter, and they must have stayed a week.
They said she had an old mule she rode or something way back once.
Yeah. Yeah, they'd go. There's an old man by the name of Lewis Vaughn. Lived way across over here in Wayne County, down over on Turk Creek, Big Sankin or somewhere back in there. He'd ride horseback plumb back out here in Macquarie County he is now, you know. I recollect him of being to my house or at our place when one of my brothers was born. Yeah, about the third one down, I guess. I, you know, just can recollect it good. But he'd get on an old mule or a horse or something and ride plumb for a mile there, you know, across here.
People seem to have so much time to
do.
I recollect, you know, if my dad was a leader, he could tell you some of that time back then.
Well, what used to be, I'd do my washing, and I was strong enough to do my washing and house cleaning and patching and work with mending clothes and things. Then I'd have time through the week to go maybe visiting. And I'd hardly miss a day. After I had a neighbor around somewhere that I could go see about him, I'd run and see about him. I'd like to do that. And it was my pleasure to see him. And I had a neighbor around that lived over from us here. And that boy never was, stood up, never walked a step, and he couldn't talk, but he could use his step and use his arms a little bit, but he was drawn, and he had some kind of fever hit him and struck him years back, and he was around 40 years old. And he laid on a pallet every day, he put himself on, they put him out on the floor. And his mother were old, and I'd go there and see him every day. I'd Reese's work in coal mines, but it didn't make any difference. I'd do my things that morning. I'd run over there and see about him. And if there's anything I could feed him or give him, I'd help do that. I always enjoyed feeding him. And she said, "You're the all the one that don't strangle him." I'd fix a straw, and I'd lay him up to his truck. The night she struck so bad, she says, "I won't leave tonight unless you'll stay here with him." I said, "Now, to satisfy you, I will lay right here by the bed by him, and I'll see every time he moves." I stayed with him that night. I stayed with him. He was just, you know, a kid that he expected mom to every time he wanted anything. It was mom all the time. But he got to where he was a real good kid. He's yet living. But they both been gone, but I don't know how in the world he's lived this long. It's just been a mystery to me because of the shape you're wearing.
They got him in old home somewhere, I guess, ain't they?
Yeah. Yeah, he's in old home. But the trouble, my idea was thinking every day when I'd have some spare time that I should run and go see that kid. Sit up again deep for and help her. That'd give her a break that day. She could take a time to rest. And I know she will wore out all the time. You know, she was getting too old to weigh down like that. And the back, he just only has her grandson maybe with him. He had to go to school every day. And just at night, every evening he'd be there. Every morning he'd be at home with the grandson. And I'd always go in and ask her, did she have water to pass? They had to pack their water from the spray. And then I'd take him some milk, or I'd take him something. And he did love for me to fix it. And I'd fix him some oats, just make them real thin. And he'd like them that way. I'd have them soupy. He did love them oats that way. I never did get him strangled. He took the hiccups on me, and he was real bad now, was it? She told me, said he's been hiccuping all night. 10 o'clock today, and it's 10 o'clock when I went on. I said, "What am I going to do?" "Well," I said, "have you tried water?" Nine steps. "Well, yes," she said, "I've done that." "Well," I said, "let's get a strong pepper pot. Get the 9 seed out and take those 9 seed and boil them and give him 9 drops of that in a spoon." And I said, "That'll stop it." We tried it, he quit. Just that, I don't know, that strong pepper was real strong. Real strong pepper.
Change the subject a little bit, but I'll just go back in the mining camps. I've heard tell that they were pretty violent places, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, in a way, they was pretty rough. They
say one of the company doctors got killed. Walked into something. You remember any of the stories of the people?
No, about all I recollect was one of the company doctors getting killed with a train. He was riding a motor car, you know, down the line to get to. To place the doctor, I guess he'd been called, you know, and I don't know, it must have been bad on schedule somewhere or another with the time of the train or something, but he run into the train with that.
He was on a motor car.
Motor car.
Yeah, motor
car. They use those motor cars to move around on?
Yeah, they would up and down the line, you know, yeah.
I wondered how, goodness, I don't know how they could do, how to get off there if this train would have come. They have to know the schedule?
Yeah, they must miss schedule about some way or another, and he's coming over the mountain. See, they had a great mountain to come over from Stearns down into Worry there. That railroad hits pretty bad over a mountain all the way down there. And he's coming over that. Of course, someone called him down in there, I guess, you know, and run into the train. Must have been bad on schedule some way, somehow, you know. Or they're knowing them people that day and time, though they were so spiritualist to try to, you know, to help somebody, he might have just been bad on thought it some way. And they run them trains pretty regularly up and down that mountain, of course. See, when they got down there at the foot of the mountain with the load, they'd switch off fire, and they had big engines. They couldn't pull on it so much up a mountain, you see. And I guess they kept them going pretty regularly up and down that mountain.
Coal industry really sort of came and went fast, didn't it?
Oh, Lord, yeah. I can recollect, Lord, when they had a dock like we was talking, see, a doctor in every camp. Had good union, good benefits, and good safety. They'd keep a safety man on at every mine. All he had to do, see, just go to every entry during the day, or he'd checking, you know, from entry to entry to see if everything had been kept safe. Now, I recollect working under all them kind of times. And come down out of where they ain't got time to look back, they'll come in and strip and tie your country up, get the coal and run off with it, they ain't got time to benefit nobody.
Just make our country ugly.
Just tie your country up, all the beauties and scenery of it and everything, and gone with it, and supposed to be money collected out of that to fix the roads back. And they'll leave the roads tore up. Someone will have that money and gone, you see.
And they say they're trying to get in the parks to all that stripping and stuff. Those parks that we've already paid for, they're going to come in and tear it up.
And they're telling that's what they're doing with it today. It's not that.
That reminds me of one thing I want to talk about, and the one thing that's kind of ironic here. You worked in the coal mines. Of course, you didn't work that long, but you would expect that you would have what's the problem you've got. It's not funny, but you've got a respiratory disease, but you never did have any trouble with black lung, did you?
No, I mean, I never did. Well, I had a lot of trouble once, but I got doctored, and they saved me in a way. I got so bad till I couldn't stay in a bed of a night for smothering.
Is that right?
Yeah, sure did. I got so bad of that dust and had so much dirt in me till I couldn't stay in a bed of a night. And the health department come down to the mines with some kind of big old X-ray and outfits, you know, and set in to X-ray all the miners. Well, they got about half of us X-rayed, and I happened to be in the bunch. And they burnt the machine up and left and never did come back. But I happened to be one already got X-rayed, you know. Well, I got a big letter back from the health department, you know, and it read bad. It read like they might be able to come down there to mines and get me, you know, and take me out if I didn't get out of there and do something about it. It read bad, and I took my letter and I struck out and went to old Doc Winchester out there at Whitley. Showed him my letter I got, you know. Well, now, he said, golly, he said, it don't read right. He said, now, I'm going to have you X-rayed. He sent me back in there, you know, and had the nurse to X-ray me. Come up with a verdict. Yeah, he said, you in the back. He said, you plumb in the back. And he said, now I'm going to send you to Lexington or send you to Knoxville, either one you want to go. Well, I took my choice towards Knoxville. And went down there. Went in there on Sunday and got a room, you know, and Of course, the old doctor, he'd x-rayed me four ways around there that day on Sunday when I got there. He x-rayed me all four ways around, you know. Hung it up on the wall. He hung them all the thems right up on the wall. He just free anybody look. And he told me, he said, if you ain't done eat up with a cancer, I'm bad food. He said, I don't know if it ain't already a bad cancer. Well, I went up in there, back in the hospital there, you know, and the next morning they come in there and give me, they wouldn't give me nothing to eat, of course. They gave me something there that knocked me out. And the last I know, there's two old big colored men and a woman are going down the aisle with me, you know, hauling me away from there. And I never knowed any more till late that evening. The old nurse got back in the room where it at, you know, deviling, joking, letting on like she fed me chicken all day. And me and knowing I hadn't eaten nothing that day. But you know what then? I don't know what they want down in there and put in my lungs, but evidently that first day they filled my lungs full of something. And then they put a machine on me the next day. And I could tell anyone the honest truth, and ain't no one would believe you could have been a living with that in you. But that first day, the second day I was there, I got a half a gallon jar full. Spit out a pure coal dust and rock dust. Come out of my lungs. I stayed there about 7 days and he gave up in. The old doctor didn't told my wife. I said, looks like I'm going to have to get him out of them mines. And when she slipped around and told me that, I said, he ain't getting me out nothing. I said, I got to try to make a living. I still had some kids to work for, you know, and I just come on back and went back down in there and went to work. And I worked on there till I retired.
But he never smoked a cigarette.
I never smoked a cigarette.
There's a lot
in my
of difference
life,
in that.
Huh? No, I never.
And
I never
used to smoke.
She'd smoke a pack or two a day, you know. She was a pretty heavy smoker in her younger days.
And I worked with coal a lot. We burnt coal.
I'd say we burnt coal and she was in that there.
I was in the dust and the taking out. And he didn't do anything home much, so I'd be on my floors, I'd kill my floors, I'd take out my ashes and pack in and out. I worked in that dust a lot of times, you know. And I would always want to take a coal. And if I took a coal, it seemed like a problem. But on later, and I've had about 19 years now that I've been, you know, this bronchial trouble. Well, it's bothered me a lot. And errors and things is different. And it's a lot different. Everybody don't work alike with that, too, to see the bronchial tubes.
Mm-hmm. But they ain't no way, boys, not changing no subject. There ain't no way I could have ever made it this long, see, if I hadn't got that treatment, though. I had enough fire to finish me up.
That would have been critical.
Yeah.
And then still...
That would have eaten my lungs up in a little while. Yeah. Yeah, it had to, because I've got a son now that's in worse shape than I am. Been in that mine, you know, full of that dirt.
There's certain people sure need this, needs to be cared. They need to see if they've got it and do something for it. And as much as I know there's been some work, a lot of has been done about it, and there will have been some abuses on it, but I think they ought to keep that going.
Buddy, you don't never doubt they ain't got a way of getting a lot of that out, boy. They can flat get it out.
They can't have a lot of extensions, but if it's your bronchial tubes, it's different. If it's your lungs, they can do a lot. And if it's your bronchial,
but if you just breathe full of, that stuff, they can soak out your lungs a lot of it.
Yeah.
Save life, you know.
I've met some people that have really had bad situations that have worked in mines for long periods of time. Because you didn't work in the mines as long as most of the people would have. How long did you work in?
29 years.
Well, that's a pretty good bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's a pretty long time. Yeah.
Yeah, I put up 29 years.
Well, I sure have enjoyed talking with y'all. It's been an awful good tape.
Well, I hope so. I enjoyed it. Now, where are you from?
I'm from Lexington.
Lexington. Yeah.
And I'm got a grant from the oral history, Kentucky oral history from Fred Franklin. That's where I used to work.